that's it. It's just so grand when you, when we love each other and we just can enjoy whatever happens, right? But when we get to hear the thoughts of this young lady that's going to be speaking up here this evening, it is so extra special to me, and I know it is to you too. And we all love her, and I think it's time that my own self, I think it's time that she decided she wanted to be a minister, but I leave it up to her, because that's all between her and God. It has nothing to do with me. But that young lady, somebody I love a lot, our Lindy.
So when was the last time we came together on a Wednesday night and didn't sing I Saw the Light? It was tonight! A couple weeks ago, Ruthie asked me if I would tell, if I would give a talk about I Saw the Light, and I said, sure. So tonight we didn't sing it, of course. Of course. But I used the song I Saw the Light and the story of Hank Williams as a jumping off point. And I have 15 pages of notes. So obviously I had a lot of things to think about and a lot of things to say. But I'm hoping that Diana will wave at me when it's 20 minutes, okay? Thank you. Many of you know that I Saw the Light was written by Hank Williams Sr., the father of Hank Williams Jr., who many of us know as a country singer today. Hank Williams' story is a very sad one in many ways and a very happy one in many other ways. He was born with a mild case of spina bifida, but it caused him great pain throughout his entire life. And as a result, he turned to drugs, alcohol, and depression. The drugs and alcohol exacerbated the depression. And although he had dozens of number one hit songs or top 10 hits and wrote hundreds of songs, he was a very unhappy man. But it is said by Jeff McComas in a talk that he gave a couple years ago about I Saw the Light that the reason that Hank Williams wrote the song was that he had gotten drunk and was driving home from the roadhouse, and he didn't know if he would get home or not, and as it turned out, he passed out in the car. But when he woke up, there was a light shining, and he realized it was the light of his house. So he had successfully, safely negotiated the distance from the bar to the house. And he wrote, I Saw the Light as a celebration of God's divine intervention in his life at that point. Unfortunately, it didn't save him from himself. You know, I was unclear after looking at the titles of Hank Williams Sr.'s songs as to whether he won the award for the most pathetic songs or if Linda Ronstadt still holds the title. You know, the Linda Ronstadt trilogy is Tracks of My Tears, Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me, and When Will I Be Loved? And Hank Williams has got at least three trilogies going. Six More Miles to the Graveyard, There's a Tear in My Beer, and My Bucket's Got a Hole in It. It's right up there. Or you have the Lonesome Trilogy, Long Gone Lonesome Blues, Nobody's Lonesome for Me, and I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. Or you have the House Without Love, Moan in the Blues, and Why Don't You Love Me? So because he's got 3-1, I think he wins over Linda Ronstadt. But seriously, I found a lot of things to think about in thinking about I Saw the Light. Not so much the specific lyrics of the song, but the concept of seeing the light, or the concept of being the light, or the concept of light versus darkness, and light versus heavy, and light as a metaphor for love, essence, wisdom, talent, etc. And the way I want to share my thoughts with you tonight is in telling four stories, one of which I have just finished. It's Hank Williams' story, but I didn't quite finish it, did I? As I said, he wrote hundreds of songs, many of which were top 10 hits, many of those were number ones, and he died at the age of 29. He was discovered dead in the back of his limousine by his 17-year-old limo driver at the end of a journey from one concert location to another. At the age of 29, this great light was put out by, if not his own hand, at least his own head and heart. So, what does that mean in the scheme of things? It means that depression can be described as a fear of not measuring up, of not being good enough. And he didn't recognize his own talents and gifts. He allowed the pain, the physical pain, to defeat him. And I can certainly relate to that, having gone through excruciating physical pain last year. It's very difficult, as many of you know in this room tonight, to negotiate life through pain. But the second story I want to tell is a counter-argument to that. It's the story of Joe Simpson, who is the writer of a book called Touching the Void. And if you didn't see the movie, you should rent it. Touching the Void is the story of Joe Simpson and his friend who were climbing Mount Siuga Grande in the Peruvian Andes. And they reached the summit of a peak that had never been summited before. But on the way down, Joe Simpson broke his leg in multiple places. And they were miles from base camp. His friend agreed that they would try to get Joe down the mountain at the end of 300 feet of rope, 300 feet at a time. His friend would anchor the rope and let Joe down on the end of the rope until he got 300 feet down. Then Joe would make a stand with an ice pick, and the friend would come down and join him, and they would repeat the process. 300 feet times miles, you can only imagine. But it gets worse, because Joe, on the end of one of those 300-foot letdowns, found himself dangling in empty space, 20 to 30 feet above the ground. And he'd never sent the signal that he was safe and ready to be joined. His friend had a choice to make. His friend was being pulled down by the weight of Joe dangling. And he had to choose between sliding off the mountain himself and taking Joe with him, or cutting his friend loose to almost certain death in order to save himself. That requires a lot of thought and a lot of trust in God and a lot of trust in your own decision that you can live with the idea that you sent your friend to almost certain death. But he did it. He cut Joe free. And Joe fell approximately 60 feet into a cave made out of a crevasse, landed on that already severely broken leg, and still survived. But he was still miles from rescue, miles from base camp, and his friend thought he was dead. So Joe Simpson crawled, literally, rolled, fell, slid, however it took to get down the mountain. And he saw the light at the end of the tunnel, because he was determined to do whatever it took to survive. He had a will beyond death. And when he got down the mountain, which he did successfully, he met up with his friend. And you can only imagine the rejoicing of the friend of finding that Joe is alive. Joe Simpson saw the light, as I say, at the end of the tunnel. He used his own personal will to live to get out of the dark and into the light, to survive death, to enjoy life. Unlike Hank Williams, he overcame adversity and triumphed. And that's all very well and good, but where am I on my 15 pages? Moving right along. the idea that we can survive adversity is the third story that I want to tell about too. And that's the story of St. John of the Cross. And he's the one who wrote Dark Night of the Soul. A dark night of the soul is a time in one's life when you lose the ability to connect with God, when you feel separate from God. And this happens to so many of us in our midlife, especially midlife. And it really is a test of faith, because the dark night of the soul feels very isolated, very lonely, very Hank Williams. I'm so lonesome I could cry. But if you can overcome it through devotion and will and prayer and faith, as St. John of the Cross did, then you can do almost anything. The thing about the dark night of the soul, though, is it's such an emotional time of life that we are caught in our feelings rather than in our thinking, and our feelings are much more difficult to overcome, as anyone who's ever been really angry knows. Or really joyful, for that matter. Somebody who's really angry will bring anybody who's marginally unhappy down. But somebody who's really joyful will bring even somebody who's really angry up. I say joy wins, Betty, and I'm giving the talk. So, it's up to us to be joyful, to keep seeing the light of faith and joy and happiness, to keep using the will to survive and to see the light. And the fourth story is my own, actually. A little bit of my own, anyway. And that is the story of a rock. Not your average, ordinary rock. But it sounds like it in the Simon and Garfunkel song, I Am a Rock. I am an island. I've built walls, a fortress deep and mighty that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. Its laughter and its loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an island. That describes me until I was in my mid-30s. I was an island, knowing that I was different and feeling isolated from all around me. Now I know that in this room that's hard to believe, because I don't feel that way at all here. But for over 30 years I felt separate and isolated from humanity, as well as from God to some extent, but I managed to keep closer to God than I did to humanity. And in 1970 my mom and dad visited me when I was living in St. Louis. And we took a road trip to visit distant cousins in Iowa, and we stopped by the banks of the, I guess it's the Mississippi River, near Keokuk, Iowa. And there was rickrack rock on the shores of the river. Only one of those rickrack rocks was round. And my dad and I looked at each other and we said, that's got to be a geode. So we picked it up and took it home with us, right? I mean, how many round brick rock racks do you see? And try saying that fast. So I kept that rock, because until you cut it open, it's only a rock. I kept that rock for 20 years without cutting it open. Remember I mentioned that sometimes the fear of not being up good enough, not measuring up, is what stops us from living? Well, I was afraid that it would turn out to be a rock if I cut it open. And as long as I didn't cut it open, I could understand and believe that it was a geode. It's kind of turning faith upside down, but you know what I mean. So I didn't cut it open, and I didn't cut it open, and I was the rock, shut off from life and love and fun, and certainly from God. So then I fell in love for the first time in my life, almost the only time. Interestingly enough, the object of my affections was moi. If you've never fallen in love with yourself, I highly recommend it. And I changed. I became much more willing to interact with people, to share myself, to be Lindy, the Lindy that God intended me to be. So in about 1990, I decided that I was going to cut open the rock. And I took it to a little rock shop out in El Cajon and left it there to be picked up the following weekend. And I drove out there on Saturday the following weekend, and the man says, "Here's your rock." And then he went like, you know, "Here's your rock." And then he said, "And it's a very unusual geode." And it is. I've never seen one like it. It looks like cottage cheese. It's not one of those flashy aquamarine or, you know, anything like that geodes. But it's a geode nonetheless. So I got in the car, started to drive back from El Cajon, and on the radio, Gloria Estefan began singing "Coming Out of the Dark." Coming out of the dark, I finally see the light now. It's shining on me. Coming out of the dark, I know the love that saved me. You're sharing with me. Starting again is part of the plan, and I'll be so much stronger holding your hand. Step by step, I'll make it through. I know I can. It may not make it easier, but I have felt you near all the way. Coming out of the dark, I finally see the light now. It's shining on me. And that was what I experienced. But to add to the God story, if you will, the very next song on the radio was "I Can See Clearly Now." The rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. Well, as dumb as I can be, it was pretty hard to miss that one. So I thank God I saw the light. Wow, we're zooming along right here. One thing that is true is that the letting your light shine is the other half of this. One half of it is seeing the light for yourself, and the other half is letting other people see your light. In the Bible, it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They all got this same quote from Jesus, who said in Mark, "Would anyone light a lamp and then put it under a basket or under a bed? Of course not. A lamp is placed on a stand where its light will shine." And pretty much the same text in Matthew and Luke. "Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night." In John, it says, "I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness." John 12:46. In John 8:12, "I am the light of the world. So if you follow me, you won't be stumbling through the darkness. For living light will flood your path." How great is that? If you follow the teachings of Jesus, you won't stumble in the darkness. And if you let your light shine before men and women, of course, then everyone will see the glorious God-like individual that you are. Well, everyone will see what you are. And it's fear that what we are isn't glorious and godlike that keeps us from shining our light. Stop doing that. Stop covering your light with a bushel, which is a basket, by the way. Stop hiding your light under a bed. Not literally. Well, I can't say I don't know for sure, but I'm hoping not literally. Shine your light. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Oh, wait, there's another song. Agnetha Fältskog, who we all know and love. When I tell you who she is, you'll go, "Yeah, we do." One of the two lead singers of ABBA. She wrote a song, "Let It Shine." Let it shine. Show me your light. Let it shine. Keep it shining into the night. Let it shine. Don't hide it. It's something to see. Let it shine. Let your love, let it shine on me. Well, as a person who has come to appreciate the light, I second what she said. Please, I beg of you, let your light shine on me. Let it shine on everyone around you. And if we all ask each other to let our light shine, then how much more will we allow it to do it? Not for ourselves, but for those who love us and whom we love. This is kind of fun. I've never done a talk this way before. Pages and pages going down. One small little story. Another one that I didn't know I was going to tell. Jan Phillips, who's the author of Marry Your Muse and The Art of Creative Thinking, lives in San Diego. And she was in a terrible automobile accident a few years back where she was pinned under the engine of her car so that the heat of the engine was burning her severely. And some men came by and said, "We'll go get help." And she said, "No, you are the help." And they picked up the car and saved her life, literally. But we don't step up to being the help unless we're exhorted by someone who's in dire need, or unless it's ourselves who are in dire need. We are the help. We have the light. We need to act upon it. Buddha said, be your own lamps. Be your own refuges. Take refuge in nothing outside yourselves. Hold firm to the truth as a lamp and refuge. And do not look for refuge in anything beside yourself. You are the light. You are the refuge. You are all that you need. And if you accept my premise that today you're going to start a new life in a light, then here are a few tips on how to do that. This is the Connie Ferris part of the talk, okay? This is trading the wrong for the right. Live with the three E's, energy, enthusiasm, and empathy. Always pray and make time to exercise. I always pray I won't have time to exercise. Drink green tea and plenty of water. Eat blueberries, wild Alaskan salmon, broccoli, almonds, and walnuts. 3 out of 4. I'll leave you to figure out which one I don't eat. Clear clutter from your house, your car, your desk. Let new and flowing energy into your life. 1 out of 3. Eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dine like a college kid maxed out on charge cards. Don't take yourself so seriously. No one else does. Ladies, burn those specially scented candles, use the 600 thread count sheets, the good china, and wear your fancy lingerie. Stop waiting for a special occasion. That special occasion is today. What other people think of you is none of your business. Terry Cole Whitaker. What you think of me is none of my business. My personal favorite, as you may recognize having heard me speak about workaholism, your job won't take care of you when you're sick. Your friends will. Stay in touch with them. Get rid of anything that isn't useful, beautiful, or joyful. And no matter how you feel, get up, dress up, and show up. Remember, you're too blessed to be stressed. In closing, because this hasn't been one of my most funny talks, I have some gratuitous pirate jokes. Gratuitous being the key word. How do you know if you're a pirate? You don't, you just are. What did the doctor say to the pirate? Open up and say, "Arr." Did you hear about the new pirate movie? It's rated R. What's the pirate's favorite radio station? NPR. What's the pirate's favorite thing to do with his wife? Argue. How many pirate jokes are lame?
All of them.
All of them are. And the people that make up all these R jokes should be what? Arrested. Why do pirates not make good lifeguards? Because they don't know CPR. So I ask you. I said it was gratuitous. I ask you, how do you fail to see the light around you? How do you miss seeing God in all? And how do you fail to be the light to all around you? Each one of us has our own answers, but it's time to stop doing both of those. It's time to see the light and to be the light. And thank you for giving me this time. Woo!